Welcome to the podcast, Your Future in Sales and Marketing, the podcast that helps you make great career decisions. My name is Mike Dixon, and I'm a professional sales and marketing recruiter. I love what I do, but my biggest frustration is seeing too many people not realizing their career potential. In this podcast, I'll introduce you to my network, an amazing group of business leaders from the biggest tier one organizations through to some super fast growth SMEs. They'll share their career journey and give unique advice and insights on managing your career and leading a function and a business. Join me, Mike Dixon of AXR Recruitment and Search, to help guide your future in sales and marketing.
Well, hello and welcome everybody to the Your Future in Sales and Marketing and Your Future in Finance joint podcast. My name is Mike Dixon, Director of the Sales and Marketing Practice here at AXR Recruitment and Search. Today I'm joined by Greg Madden, founder of AXR and longtime senior finance recruiter. Greg, how are you this morning?
I'm really good, really good. Pleased to be part of it. I'm really, really passionate about interview techniques. So pretty excited about what we're going to cover today.
Fantastic. As most of you have seen by how you found this podcast, whether you search for it or whether you stumbled across it, whether you're a regular podcast listener for our pods, we are going to talk about interviewing. Now, a lot of people interview very well. The vast majority perhaps underperform, it's fair to be said. And we see it all as recruiters. And this session is to help you to think about it, be prepared, so that you can focus all your energy and effort into the conversation, whether a role and an organization is one you want to join, as opposed to second-guessing yourself, am I doing a good interview? Am I interviewing well enough? Through this podcast and our guide as well, which we'll produce and you can get access to, hopefully you'll be prepared to have just make a great career decision and be less worried about your interviewing. So without further ado, let's get into it. Do you reckon every interview follows the same format?
Absolutely not. There's basically two main interview structures. A very, very structured interview, which actually most clients don't do, and then the unstructured interview, which is much more challenging. It's a lot more free-flowing, not sure where it's going to go, and I think as the candidate being interviewed, you've got to take more control.
And how do you identify how the interview is going to go? Is it obvious from the start that, okay, I know this is structured, I've got a plan for this, or just sometimes it's just really hard to tell what's going to come at you?
Yeah, look, I think that goes a bit to preparation, doesn't it? And really the first step in really good interviewing is being prepared. And we see it when we interview people and regularly ask them a really simple question, tell me a bit about the company that we're talking about, and they haven't actually done any work on that at all at a really simple level. And so preparation is the key at the beginning, and that's getting to know what the company does, finding out the structure of the potential interview. Most companies will let you know. If you ask the question, they will let you know. Finding out people that you might know in the organization, getting topical information that's going on about that company in the market or things they are doing in the market. All those things for me, attire, all those things are really critical to preparing for the interview.
I reckon that's top tip number one, guys, is what you said there around, if you ask the company about the structure, they'll probably tell you.
They will.
And if you're being interviewed by a recruiter, a good recruiter will probably tell you what to expect, so you know what's going on. Mm. But actually, if you're walking into the interview kind of wondering how this is going to go, then actually I reckon you missed a trick. I think yeah. For your first job is to kind of know, do I know roughly how this is going to go?
Yeah.
Therefore, am I prepared to answer the questions that are going to come my way?
That's right. And if you've got a feel for whether it's formal or less structured interview, it will help you in your mindset in preparing for the meeting. And meeting is another key word that I like using when I'm advising people. I'm not a big fan of calling it an interview. I like people to approach it as a meeting. You're making a decision about the opportunity as much as they are making a decision about you as an individual for their organization. And it just slightly changes the mindset of going into that meeting / interview.
Top tip number two, treat it like a meeting. Mm. I think it's rare in life you go to a meeting and you have no idea what the agenda is going to be in that meeting.
That's right.
So the interview is a meeting. You should have a pretty good idea what that agenda is going to look like,
yep,
how it's going to flow, what their expectation is, what your expectation is, and what a good outcome is going to be.
That's right. That's right. And whether you actually have an agenda that's published and on the table, you should really develop your own, shouldn't you, to take into the meeting.
Yeah. And today we're going to go through some of the kind of common parts of how that meeting stroke interview plays out, whether it's in any particular order or not. That's the challenge, to figure out how structured it is.
Yeah.
But we'll perhaps identify some of the common areas that you're going to get into and how to identify which space of the interview you're actually in as well, which is a trick.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Now, and I think if you treat every interview that you're going to as being unstructured, you'll always be prepared because the structured ones are easier. They'll target what they want. They'll drag the information out of you. So go in being prepared for it to be unstructured and you can't be disappointed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a big difference between interviewing online and face-to-face.
Oh, there's a really big difference. Yeah, yeah. I think the hardest thing online is keeping control of the meeting. I still don't. So as Mike's touched on earlier, you know, we've interviewed thousands of people over the better part of 30 years each, and the majority of people I've interviewed, even if they're good, can still do a better job. And that's in a face-to-face environment. When it's in the virtual world, keeping control of that meeting for both parties is much more difficult.
A lot of the interview is reading what's happening.
Mm.
And I often find at the start, most people are trying to build a bit of social capital or trying to establish a bit of rapport, you know, and then it kind of, in a structured interview, will very clearly delineate itself from, okay, we've done our chit-chat, we're now going to have an interview.
Yeah.
And an unstructured interview might flow more naturally into that, and you're not sure. Therefore, am I now being interviewed?
Yeah,
I've got to recognise what's coming at me, what's being asked, and how therefore do I respond?
Yeah, that's right. And in prepping for this, we had the discussion around that pivotal moment where you go from, I guess, the rapport building to actually the interview, and it's quite a tricky part of the actual meeting, isn't it?
Yeah, and. Face to face, probably easier to read.
Absolutely.
Online, harder. So we'll try and refer to both situations as we go through this. But in my experience, interviews are commonly starting with the same seemingly innocuous throwaway line, which is you know, just take me through your resume, give me a summary of you, or you know, walk me through your experience. And it feels like this really easy throwaway comment. But actually, you know, how long do you speak for?
Yeah.
You know, how much do you give?
That's right.
Is you know, and it's very easy to get that wrong.
Absolutely. And look, broadly, I've held the view, I'd be interested in yours, that I think less is more. So you want to be reasonably concise about your career journey, depending on where you're at in your career, but working on the basis that most people we're talking to are middle managers, more the last 10 years. But it's a real high-level synopsis of your career journey to where you're at now.
Completely. I think people get caught up, as you do when you start reminiscing about what you did, you start to relive the moments and you get a bit caught up in, oh, then I did this, then we did this. And in actual fact, the interviewer isn't asking you about every achievement you've ever had. You're just saying, give me a summary.
Yeah.
You know, and I think to me, the opportunity there is to talk about more, how did I get to this point? How did my life kind of unfold? Decisions I made to get to this point? That's an authentic journey. Is better. It should never be more than 5 minutes. 3 to 5 minutes is probably the tops.
Absolutely.
And the amount of times I have to stop somebody after minute six and say, well, we're still 10 years away from today. And you know, you're rambling on about what you did 10 years ago.
It's also a period, you've got to remember, you're nervous, but the person interviewing you, that's not what they do every day. So they're uncomfortable. They're a bit nervous. So it's a soft way to actually break the ice and give a little bit of breathing space. But it's not, like you said, it's not to be talking for 20 minutes. It's a 3 to 5 minute, you know, capture your breath, give them a chance to get their thoughts together and get on with the meeting.
I'm interested in your thoughts, Craig, because one of the things I really like when someone gives me that summary and I think, oh, that's good, is when they inject a little bit of their life into that career summary.
Mm.
So you could be very much, you know, this is how I started here, and then you take me through your roles, I ended up here.
Mm.
But actually, life is running alongside that and influences all of your decisions. So if you're actually able to inject a little bit of, I moved country, because of this or that. At this point, I got married and had kids, or something serious happened in my life at this point, and or I was playing sport or whatever. And there's little mini, just mini kind of vignettes of life's experiences actually creates that social capital,
connection
that you start to relate to the individual, and it becomes a story that the interviewer feels comfortable with, to your point on breaking down the nerves both ways, as opposed to this very formal, formulaic, this is how I did my career.
At the end of the day, people, if they've got two people that are of equal skill, they hire the person they like, and that's the connection part, isn't it? Absolutely agree with that completely. And again, if you go back to your planning and you do a bit of research on the person that you're meeting and you can find some insights into them, well, try and find the common ground. It's going to make the interview much easier for you and for that person.
That's a really good point, because you could, you know, bring someone with you in that journey. Say, you know, I noticed you went to the UK as well, and we were there at the same time.
That's right.
That common ground is.
Oh, look, another little tip I've got is, how often do you go to a normal meeting or an interview, and it's usually the same process. You're sitting in reception waiting. You've usually got an uncomfortable walk from reception to a meeting room, and then you've got to settle down. And generally speaking, people are lazy and take a missed opportunity. They talk about, did you find a parking spot? Is it hot out there? Really lazy subject matter. What a great chance to demonstrate a little bit of knowledge. And rather than leading with, oh, wow, it's a beautiful building, lead with, I heard you guys launched a new product last, or saw the launch of a new product last week. How good is that? You know, and take it as a chance to demonstrate your knowledge and talk about something that the person you're meeting with, in theory, is going to be passionate about, and you will differentiate yourself and start building rapport so quickly, whereas everyone else will be going, oh, yeah, I couldn't find a park. Oh, wow, nice building. Oh, wow, that's it.
Yeah.
One's lazy and one stands out.
Completely.
And that theme throughout the whole of the meeting, I think, is critical.
Shows passion. It shows you're interested. So I also think in you've got to do that. You've in this, for instance, this career journey, it's a career narrative. I think people just stop, and now I'm here. I'm the you know, finance director. I'm the sales manager, and it's like the end. And actually, you're here for a reason. You're here because you're interested in this business, and you're interested in the role. So tell them where and why this business and this role could fit in your journey.
And
next, what I'm looking for is an organization like yours. This is why.
Yeah.
And this role makes sense in terms of my career planning, because what I think I bring is this, and what I could go on to do is that. And that's why I'm so excited about having this interview today.
It makes it so much easier for you and for the person that's interviewing you.
They're already thinking, oh, I get it. You're a candidate for this because it makes sense in your career flow, because you told me so.
Now, my advice on that is do it incrementally throughout the meeting, so that you don't knock them out of the park in the first minute before you've actually got to the meeting room. But you know, it is an incremental process of start with some interesting common subject matter, try and lean on some personal connections as early as your overview, because 90% of meetings will start that way, as we know, and then build on it as you start answering questions, and then revisit it at the end of the meeting.
What comes next in your experience after that kind of summary, the intro, the meeting started? You know, in a we'll look at it two ways. You know, in a structured interview, what would you expect to happen next?
In a structured interview, they will go to the areas, the four or five key deliverables in the role. So they will usually have a question profile for each deliverable, and they will dive into it. And like I touched on earlier, that's why those interviews are actually easier, because they lead you to the content. Then it's really up to you how well you answer that. But I guess we'll talk more about that later. The unstructured interviews are more complex, because they'll want to try and get the same information out, but they won't do it in maybe a structured way. They won't have the same question profiles. So there's more of an onus on the individual that's meeting with them to take a role, active role in making sure you get your information out.
Yeah. And even if you have tried to do your due diligence and and ask for an agenda, and it's the sort of interview there's not going to be an agenda, then at the very least, you've probably got a position description or a candidate pack or something that you can kind of relate to and perhaps challenge within that, you know, and understand within that one of the key points here. So even if there's not an obvious agenda, you should be able to pick apart what do I read in this position description that are the deliverables? You know, because if you don't know what the deliverables are, you probably shouldn't be there. But so if you know, then no matter how this interview is going to go, I'm probably able to kind of answer some of these questions.
So I would argue if you don't know what the 3, 4, 5 key deliverables are in the role, you shouldn't be going to the interview.
Yeah.
Because you're wasting your time.
Because you don't know if you're the right person.
You don't even know. You don't know if it's a good career move. Yeah. You don't know. And that's part of planning. And it's look, and that's in an absolute perfect world, you should know them. There's going to be circumstances where you don't. But my experience would say if the company can't give you the deliverables before you meet with them, it's nearly an alarm for whether it's a good move, because it really means one of two things: that it's actually not that challenging a role. There's not much actually in the role, and that reason they can't give you the deliverables because they don't actually need you to do much. So probably not a good career move.
Yeah. Or they don't know what's to be done.
Or they don't. Or secondly, yes, there are, but they don't know what they are.
Yeah.
Which is still not great, but better than having no challenge in the role. Yeah. And then the ideal is obviously that they can very clearly state, here are the four things that in 18 to 20 months or 24 months' time that we need you to deliver on, and these are the challenges you're going to face to deliver on them. You should literally be getting that level of information before you turn up.
Yeah. Really good tips there. One of the other areas I wanted just to touch on is, again, this feels like really old school interview questions, but increasingly the feedback I'm getting from candidates is they get these in interviews all the time, which is strengths and weaknesses. Now, it's often worded a lot more, professionally nowadays, but, and sometimes it's not as obvious as tell me what you're good at. But is that something you're seeing more of, being able to kind of demonstrate your self-awareness, understand yourself, know your own journey, and being able to articulate back what you're going to bring and what you're still working on?
Definitely. And strengths you should be across. And strengths, I guess, in many ways, we tend to be a little bit humble and we tend to maybe not put them on the table as forthrightly as we should. But generally, I think most people are comfortable with their strengths. I think weaknesses or development areas, or however you want to phrase it, is the more difficult one. I think the answer, and that's something you're very passionate about, and I think you can give quite a lot of detail on, if you know your career destination, whether it's your next career step in that destination or it's your destination, you're going to have what I call the skills gap. And a skills gap are the areas that you need to develop to head towards where you want to be career-wise. And unless, if you're looking at an opportunity as a career move and there's not a skills gap that you're addressing, I would argue you're not making a good career move. You want to be building up and addressing the skills that you've got a gap on. And so a really good way I work with people on positioning their weaknesses is around a positive mindset of what's my skills gap, and address it with the lens of, hey, here's my destination. I'm comfortable that I'm good enough to be in that role. And the things I'm addressing is, so what I bring to the table is this, this, and this, but what I'm addressing and what I'm really excited about this role is, it's addressing this. And so bluntly, that's for your role, I guess, a weakness. But in terms of what I can do, I know I can do that, and it's part of my journey.
Yeah, I love that phrasing of the skills gap. Without a skills gap, why would you go? But actually, most people get really defensive about that whole question on weaknesses or development areas. And they either try and be smart, and they just spin a strength, or they talk to something almost meaningless, which is, funnily enough, meaningless, too minimal to make any difference. All these struggle to answer it, and they just waffle around.
Yeah.
But to me, it shows a lack of self-awareness, on your own career journey, to your point. So I love the phraseology of a skills gap, because everyone's on a journey, and there's also things you're there's a skills gap. There's also things you're inherently never going to be brilliant at. But if you understand what they are, then you probably have got a good mitigation plan in place that limits the damage.
Yeah,
as well, and it's fine. That's really powerful to talk about.
Absolutely, and generally, again, if you're prepared enough, you can position that relative to the role you're looking at. So for example, you may not enjoy people management, and the role you've got, and you're not a natural leader of people, but the role you're looking at may be, a standalone sales role, which is addressing some great skills gaps for you, but hasn't got leadership in it. So highlight leadership as not being, that's a kind of example. So you can play it to within the role, but you've got to be honest with yourself. And I think if you can always position it in a positive way, with like in terms of career journey, for example, most people will go, oh, that makes a lot of sense, and they'll move on. What you're trying to do in interviews is avoid creating question marks, aren't you? So you, like anything, you want to try and give the problem and a solution at the same time, and that's why I love that skills gap career destination. Here's the problem, but here's where I'm going, so it won't be a problem.
Yeah. The flip of getting that wrong, and it's an easy area to get wrong. In fact, it's the area that probably most clients come to me first of all to say, how do they go around development? How do they answer those questions? What's their journey like? Where are they? But the flip of getting it wrong is almost being too arrogant in that space. And I get that. Maybe that's sales and marketing. I get that a little bit sometimes. The ego leads. And the most common one that I get, which I really don't like, is, and I'll say this bluntly, but what in summary is I'm the smartest person in the room. People can't keep up with me. Now they're smart enough not to use those exact words, but that's kind of what they're saying. Really? That's just arrogance. That's not weakness.
That only resonates in investment banks.
Possibly. Maybe that work will But I think it's a really good tip. It's super important to understand that and be prepared for it. So let's get into the kind of meat of it, which is the deliverables as we talked to. It could be phrased as, and how it's asked is in lots of different ways. You get technical questions, you get competency questions, behavioral questions. They're all addressing the same things, which is these are things that are important that we're going to get a sense of how your skills and experience come together, how good you are at this stuff, and how confident we are you're going to be able to deliver these things for us. And therefore, knowing what they are in terms of the questions is good. Being able to identify what's being asked is another thing, and that's always not that easy in an interview. But what would your advice be to a candidate in terms of preparing for this section of an interview?
Yes, I've got a couple of things I believe in around preparation for the body of the interview. One is for most, middle senior managers, I call it the 20-80 rule. So 20% of what you've done in your career is 80% of what you're going to talk about. So know that 20% really well. I think the worst way to answer a question, if you get asked a question, let's just say theoretically about your role as a leader in dealing with conflict, and you lead with, oh, well, I've got a lot of examples. Let me think about the best one. Too late. You've missed the boat. You want to be able to go in, oh, by far the best example of that is, and get into it. So to do that, you need to have got rid of all the noise throughout your career and isolated what are my major achievements and how do they best represent the key key behaviours that I've got to demonstrate and my numeric, verbal and abstract, my problem solving, my analytical skills, the different behaviours and the different skills that I've got, and know them inside out. Because if you've got 5 to 7 of them, you can lean on them for nearly every situation that you're going to confront in an interview and get rid of the noise.
I completely agree. I think that number of 5 to 7 is about right in my experience. And even if your career is only short, if you're 3-4 years in or even less, you may not have 5 or 7, but you're going to have 3 or 4. But if your career is 20 years plus, then 5 or 7 is plenty.
Yeah.
And being able to know the content, be able to storytell around that content and being comfortable with it means you can adapt to any questions coming your way. So we'll talk about how to identify the question, because that's, I think that's also quite interesting. Again, structured, unstructured. In a structured interview, you probably know exactly what's coming because the interview will have clarified. I'm now going to ask you about this.
Yes.
And why it's important is because of this reason.
Yeah.
And here's the question. So you're thinking, well, I know exactly what's coming here. But in an unstructured interview, it's not that obvious.
No, no. And a couple of insights here. Never make an assumption. If you're not sure about a question, get clarification. So I ask a question at the CFO level regularly. I'll say to somebody, oh, look, I want to understand your involvement in strategy. Can you give me a good example? Now, I intentionally ask an ambiguous question. What I'm actually looking for is a question back for clarification of, okay, can I get some context to the problem? Because it's strategy. And I would say fairly about 1 in 50 people actually ask me a question back. The other 49 roll into an answer assuming what the problem is. And generally speaking, the majority of that go to what I call an enterprise example about strategy improving the performance within a business. But my definition of strategy is helping grow a business. So straight away, the majority of people are actually, by making an assumption, lead down the wrong path. So whenever you're in an interview and you're not sure of the context of the question and you feel like you're making an assumption, don't answer, get clarity.
Yeah. It's a very common, that ambiguous question, if you're ever going for interviews with consulting firms, that's exactly what happens.
Yeah.
They are, because if you're going for a consulting firm, they expect you to ask questions.
Yeah.
But actually, it holds true to any interview. And even a structured interview, the question, again, can be deliberately obtuse, can be misleading, because it's challenging you.
Yeah.
So don't always take what's read. And if you're not clear, even if it's, you know, you've just misheard it, then stopping and clarifying by asking a question or challenging the interviewer back is really powerful.
Yeah.
And as Greg and I have interviewed, God knows, 10,000 people over the years, whenever someone stops me and asks me a question to a point of clarification, they just go up 3 notches in my estimation.
Oh, incredible. Yeah, yeah. Because they're demonstrating a behavior, aren't they? The ability to challenge. In any leadership role you need that. So that's my first thing. And generally, like you said, in a structured interview, if it's ambiguous, it's intentional. In an unstructured interview, half the time they'd even know they've asked an ambiguous question, but you don't want to spend the next 10 minutes answering the wrong question. So get clarity. Then the second thing is have a system to how you answer questions. Lots of different acronyms for the systems, but if you get a system in place for answering the question, it keeps you on point. So what is a system? It's really got 3 parts. I think we're both in agreement on this. What was the problem or the circumstance, and making sure you give some context. And the more relevant that is to the problem that you're being interviewed for, the better. So that's why if you understand what they're after, it makes it easier. Then talk about, and probably the bulk of the answer relates to what you did about it. So, and it's the role that you played in it. So talk in I did, acknowledge team and other people, absolutely, but interested in how you led that. And then most importantly, well, not most importantly, but critical, is giving a result. Yeah, an achievement has to be measurable. You have to have delivered a result. And we generally see a lot of people get lost in the middle, but they don't quite define what the problem was, and very rarely do people give you the result.
Yeah, they get stuck in the middle piece. And
yeah,
that formula is great. You'll have heard of STAR. I just find that's a step too far.
I do.
CAR, context or action result, or circumstance action result is a really easy. It's like a story. You've got the beginning, you've got the middle, and you've got the end.
Yeah.
And in terms of time, you know, again, we talked about 3 to 5 minutes earlier on. That's a long time to talk for, but it's amazing how many people talk for longer and say less.
Yeah.
But if you've got that structure, you can talk for 3 to 5 minutes and give a really in-depth and concise answer.
Yeah.
It's not a paradigm. It does actually work.
Yeah.
Context. Enables you to kind of, give a relevance to the organization you're being interviewed for.
Yeah.
This is the world I'm in.
Yeah.
I've come from. And you'll identify this world.
Yeah.
These are the actions. I often say just perhaps step through 3 actions. Tell us about the most important 3 things that you did. Yeah. Again, keep yourself on point.
That's a good point. Yeah.
And then it'll keep you nice and tight. And if you can layer the result back up to the problem, the context, the circumstance, then you're just, naturally, delivering the answer perfectly.
Perfectly. And the great thing about the circumstance as well is, and this is why, if you've got your 5 to 7 key achievements, one of those key achievements in theory could have been the implementation of a new ERP system if you're in finance. So you've implemented, you've led the implementation. That could be tailored around project management. It can be tailored around stakeholder management. It can be tailored around conflict resolution. So that's where you use circumstance to direct it to whatever the behavior is that you feel or you're being challenged around. It's the same achievement, and that's why that's your theory of having your 5 to 7 key achievements. You can lean on them so many ways. And it comes back to setting up circumstance.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Absolutely perfect example of how to flex and adapt your answers. But you've got a backpack of 5 to 7.
Mm.
Any question that comes your way for any interview, you're prepared.
Yeah.
You really are. So that's the meat of the interview.
You know,
and you'll go through and if you've got those prepared, then you perform really, really well. And that's where you've been really scored.
Yeah.
But when you get to the next stage of the interview, I think people often kind of breathe a big sigh of relief and think, okay, I've kind of done the tough part.
Mm.
And to me, it's never done, So they often it then comes back to, well, okay, what questions have you got? What would you like to know?
Mm.
And there's nothing more soul destroying for an interviewer than hearing the candidate say, I'm all good.
Mm-hmm. You've covered everything.
You've covered everything.
Yeah.
You've been a really efficient interviewer and your briefing pack is perfect. Yeah. So I'm really keen. I'm fully informed. Yeah. And you're like, oh, that's so disappointing.
Yeah. Look, I agree. Look, I think at that point you're probably in broadly one of 3 camps. You're not interested. You're interested but you don't feel you've interviewed very well, or you're interested and you feel you've done a pretty good interview, okay? Now, I think a lot of people fall into the middle category, which is, I think I interviewed okay, but maybe not as well as I should have, and I'm really interested. And like any negotiation or meeting situation, it's a good time for a circuit breaker. And for me, and you can use this even earlier, if you're in the bulk of the interview and you're losing control, I think this is a good circuit breaker, because anytime you lose control, if you're in a negotiation on the phone and you lose control, you find a reason to hang up and start again, because that puts you back in control. The simple question of literally going, okay, look, I'm really interested, but I just want to get clarity. What are, in your opinion, the 3 or 4 major deliverables in this role? I just want clarity for myself. What a great way, if you've lost control, to get back on point. And get them talking again about, and making sure they actually know what they are. And then once you've revisited those, then really simple questions start getting around. I'll stick with the theory of ERP. You want me to implement an ERP system. Great. Have you got a budget allocated? What team, have you got an external partner? You'll have 100 questions.
Yeah. You should have. I love the idea of a circuit breaker. That's really cool. But this section is important. When I interview somebody, I'm kind of I'm measuring them and I score them.
Yeah.
And I score this section too. How good are the questions? How relevant were they? Because it shows that you know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
And you can decide. You might decide checked out because I don't want this job. That's fine. Mm.
Yeah.
But it's a small world. So leave a good impression. So I would still ask questions. But it's genuinely your chance. You've got the potential hiring manager in front of you.
Mm.
You've got the organizational expert sitting there. So you're interviewing them as much as they're interviewing you.
Yeah.
So here's your chance to turn the tables and do it really smartly. Yeah. So be prepared, be informed, and ask relevant questions that are going to challenge them. Don't make it too easy.
Mm.
Ask them questions that you really want to know the answer to.
Absolutely. I'm quite passionate about the it's called the meeting pyramid or the sales pyramid. And you know, you go through the four or five pillars of the meeting, and then you go back and then you revisit those. And so you bring them back to the table and you go, so I think the same in an interview. If you've gone through the bulk of the meeting and then you go, okay, look, so as I see it, the key challenges in this role, the key deliverables are these four things. Great. And get agreement from the person you're meeting. Okay. Now, look, of those, the one that I don't understand enough about is this one, the implementation of the ERP. So I understand you want to do it, but what do you see as the major challenges for your organization to actually do this?
I think that's bringing it back to the relevance of the role and what the role is there to do.
Mm.
Because that's it. If people join an organization, they don't join a job, but the job's what you're there to do.
Yeah.
So getting a sense of that, I think, is really important. You can have generic questions as well, which are really powerful.
Which
I think are great. But if you can steep them in some sort of reality,
yeah.
You know, for example, you know, through your research, you might have talked to people who worked at the organization. And you might have a bit of an inside track into some of the priorities or challenges they've had. So make sure you refer to those.
That's right. Yeah.
This is your chance to show, I've researched, I understand some of your business, and I'm going to show you through my questioning what value I can bring here.
Absolutely. And that goes back to treating it as a meeting, not an interview, because that's a change in mindset. You're making a decision about them as much as they're making a decision about you. And if you have that mindset, you're prepared to ask a lot of questions.
Mm.
Where the interview kind of mindset is, oh, I don't want to offend them too much. Oh,
yeah.
I don't want to ask anything too sharp because I might miss out.
Yeah.
And if you're in that mindset, you're not going to get the job.
Yeah, completely.
Mm.
And what about towards the end, you know, where it's starting to wrap up? Maybe it's a sales thing, but doesn't that happen all the time? Maybe 20% of the interviews I'm in this the salesperson will try and close me on how well they've done. Does it happen in finance as well?
Doesn't happen as much in finance, but look, I encourage finance executives at interview to try and close on a positive note. Again, it's only a little difference, and generally speaking, finance people aren't going to oversell themselves as a generalisation, but it is generally the case. So I try and encourage them to say, if you are interested, let them know. And just say, look, really enjoyed meeting with you. I am really interested in this opportunity. And comfortably restate your value proposition. Look, I'll bring a lot to the table in control and planning, and I'm really excited to get exposure to transformation.
Yeah.
Then if you're really brave, say, have you got feedback for me? Now, that's up to you, but I think the first half of that is critical.
Yeah. I think in my experience, the kind of direct close often feels too aggressive in an interview. And Ben, when I've hired salespeople for a long, long time, so you think I'd probably say the opposite, I want to see a salesperson close me. It doesn't feel great to me in an interview. I think there's better ways to do it. I think restating your value proposition is smart, and looping that into something softer around, this is what I bring. Now, perhaps you could just talk to me about the next stage in the interview, who might be involved and what the timelines are, because I am considering two other opportunities, and I'm really interested in your opportunity.
Yeah.
So that's a much softer way of kind of leading them to a close without actually just telling them, is there any reason why you wouldn't hire me?
Yeah,
now, I find that quite
That's
annoyingly direct.
Yeah. It's uncommercially direct.
Yeah.
Isn't it really? And what you are trying to show here is that you can be direct, but you can be subtle at the same time. Yeah.
So the interview's finished. You know, you've done a great summary job and you feel you've done as well as you can. Do you encourage people to follow up after an interview?
Oh, look, I think if you're dealing with the organization directly, a polite email to say, hey, enjoyed the catch up. Per my message at the meeting, I'm really interested in talking further. If you've got any further questions, let me know. It doesn't hurt at all. Generally speaking, obviously, if it's through recruiters, we manage that process for you generally. So, and look, I've had candidates that go back directly. I personally have no problems with it. I do like them to let me know they've done it, but I've absolutely got no problems with it.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I think if you're working with a recruiter, they're your partner. They'll understand the tone, and whether it's an appropriate thing to do or not. So I've always looped in the recruiter directly. Yeah, it's probably a nice way to loop off. But I think otherwise, I'd work through recruiters. Well, that's why I think not.
Yeah,
great. I think we've covered a lot, guys. I think I have some really good hints, tips, content there. To reiterate, we've got a guide, which an AXR recruitment search guide to getting yourself interview fit. It's something that we all do rarely. Most people I talk to interview a lot more than they're being interviewed. So no matter how senior or junior you are, it's actually a kind of a nervous thing to go through. But if you're prepared, you strip away a lot of those nerves and you really enhance your chance of just making a great career decision.
Absolutely. Interviewing is a skill and you can develop it. And I've seen lots of people get fantastic career moves because they actually went to the energy of actually developing their interview skill technique.
Yeah, exactly. Guys, thanks so much. That's been Mike Dixon and Greg Madden on Your Future in Sales and Marketing, Your Future in Finance. Hope you enjoyed the session.
Thank you.
I hope you enjoyed today's podcast from AXR Recruitment and Search. We're passionate about helping you get the most out of your sales and marketing career. Keep listening as we bring you more inspiring journeys and advice from Australia's sales and marketing leaders. You just can't get this career insight anywhere else. My name is Mike Dixon. See you next time on Your Future in Sales and Marketing.